Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 76 of Season 4 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a hilarious and poignant journey through the 1989 Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Sean German of the Next Scene podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me back.
I'm glad
to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you came back, especially after, you know, me breaking into your house last season and, you know, recording there. So, you know, the fact that you're letting me in on your computer this time is fine. You know, that worked. So episode 76 begins with Marie and Jess trying to comfort one another and ends with Harry and Sally getting ready to eat their salads. So last week we had one of the most pivotal weeks of this movie. You know, we had the point where Harry and Sally finally consummated their relationship, and now we're in the repercussions area of the movie. You know, like a typical rom-com, you know, you have things that are going really well, and then something happens, and then the characters somehow get angry at one another and have to try and reevaluate their lives, and you know, that's where we are right now. They're reevaluating what actually, you know, where they want to go from here. And we ended things on Friday with both of them, you know, talking separately to, you know, Jess and Marie. And I mean, we talked a lot about the fact last week about how amazing that scene is. You know, the I mentioned this last week, but I'll mention it again. The fact that Rob Reiner claims or says on the commentary that they recorded that episode, or sorry, they filmed that scene more than 60 times just to get it right, because they had to get the timing right between all four of them. You know, that just shows the dedication that these actors have to making that scene work and making the movie work.
Yeah. The dedication of the actors and, you know, something about Rob Reiner as a director. I mean, he's still relatively young. This is his, I think his fifth, you know, feature film as a director. But, you know, wow, what a five just right out of the gate. Obviously, you know, had been in show business for a long time and through, you know, All in the Family and his father and everything else. But yeah, so really, really interesting directing. And then, you know, that I don't get to talk about, because that was last week, but kind of we get the aftermath of that scene.
You can talk about that if you want. Yeah. That's fine.
I think you covered it well. Just, yeah, it's really interesting. It really just that, you know, that decision with the split screen, and then we kind of end up with them in bed, Marie and Jess, and this thing. And like, this is, you know, I think this is a, you know, something that maybe not most, but probably a lot of married people have said, you know, just turn to each other and be like, you know,
tell me that I never have to be out there again.
Yeah, just, you know, so thankful for not have to deal with you know, being single and the dating scene and all this stuff, where at least you know, not that there are no issues, not that marriage solves all the problems with relationships, but at the very least, like, you've got a baseline. You know, if you know, whatever questions or disagreements or arguments we may have, at least, like, usually the couple, you know, we agree we are married. Like, you have at least some, just, you know, agreement of where the relationship stands. Whereas, yeah, when you're single, you don't know. And then we've got, you know, a bit of, well, I'm going to presume dramatic irony, that these characters are saying things that they don't necessarily mean. And they're sort of, you know, lying, maybe lying is too strong a word, but they're not being honest with each other. And I don't think with themselves, when they both, you know, we get like the back and forth between Sally and Harry and both saying, you know, this was a mistake, but I don't know.
Right. Like, well, whatever. We'll get there in a second. We'll get there soon. I mean, first
we'll get there.
Right. So, I mean, the whole idea, first of all, I like the fact that the way that this minute starts, we actually get the punchline of, you know, everything that happened, you know, at the end of last week. You know, right. It basically gets cut off, and then we have the you know, where Marie turns to Jess and says, tell me I never have to be out there again. And he responds, you will never have to be out there again. And I mean, I love the fact that, you know, at the beginning of this movie, or at the beginning when we meet Jess and Marie, they are both basically a mess when it comes to relationships. And not that Harry and Sally were in great shape, but Harry and Sally at least created this great friendship between them. We had
Right.
Marie the whole time talking about Arthur. I guess if she's the mistress, what would you even call her boyfriend? I don't even know if that's the right terminology for what we would call Arthur. I mean, there's a lot of things we could call him, but we're trying to be nice here.
Right. Yeah, but the married man that she's having an affair with,
yeah,
we know he's never going to leave.
Yes, it's and she knows it too. You're right. You're always right. I just love the fact that Jess basically talks about the fact that, he's at a stage in his life where he feels that he doesn't need to be in a relationship. And then within, minutes afterwards in the movie, he's already, fallen in love with somebody and wants to spend the rest, and moves in with her and wants to, spend the rest of his life with her. So it's,
right.
I mean, it's funny that you mentioned dramatic irony, because that's more or less what that is also. The way that these two characters and they are not the paradigms of perfect relationship people at the beginning or when we first meet them, and they've turned into that because they're the stable ones.
And that's one of the things I really like about this film. I'm not generally a huge romantic comedy fan, and I didn't come here to badmouth movies or the genre.
You can, you can. That's
I can, but I think we're most as hosts and as guests, and I think most listeners, we're here to celebrate the film and by extension the genre. But I do find and this is not even this is not restricted to romantic comedies, but the secondary characters are very they're very flimsy. They're just there to kind of serve the plot. They're very, they're just kind of plot devices. They're not really characters. Mm-hmm. And maybe this goes more to, the writer than the direction. But, Marie and Jess, they've got an arc that you described. They've got a character arc. They kind of grow. We see their relationships develop. You could almost do like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern version of this film, like from their perspective, see how
that would actually be really cool. Unfortunately, it'd be very difficult since the two of them have both passed on, unfortunately.
But like they're real characters, and we get a real arc for them, and we see their growth. And like you said, when we first meet them, they're both romantically, messes. They're train wrecks. And then here we see, I mean, at least in terms of, as far as we know, the end of the film, they live happily ever after. They seem,
correct.
That they hit it off right away. They seem a good couple, and they're getting along well. So, good for them.
Right. I mean, I also love, I mentioned this slightly last week, but I love the pictures on the wall on both sides of their beds. It's hard to make out what they are, but they look like possibly airplanes or things like that. I can't really tell. Maybe it's someone on a boat. Mm-hmm. On one side and another one on the, maybe it looks like a plane. I don't know. They're just, yeah. I like the decoration of their apartment.
Yeah. I mean, on Jess's side, it definitely looks like a plane, like an old style biplane.
Mm-hmm.
Marie's side, I don't like, it kind of looks like it's a boat in the air. I mean, my assumption would be if it's, some sort of flying machine, we usually think, airplane or zeppelin or something. It's kind of behind a lamp, so we don't get a great
right. When I first saw it, I thought it was the Hindenburg, because it looks like there are flames coming out of it, but it's not.
No. And I do like that they both have their own phones, like separate phones and separate phone numbers.
Yes. Well, because they're both professionals, but that's it.
Right.
We don't really know enough about what they all do, but apparently Marie and Jess are both important enough that they each need to have their own phone number, own phone.
Right.
To remind everyone, obviously this was a long time before people had cell phones. So, the fact that they have two phone lines, already says something. I mean, we talked a little bit about that last week when the phone was ringing and they both go, "That's yours."
Yeah. It's modern couple problem.
Yes, apparently. Very true. And then, the scene changes and we see Sally putting on makeup and, there's like somber music playing at the same time. And then we, as she's putting this makeup on, we hear her voiceover and she says, "I'll just say we made a mistake." And as she's talking, we then start hearing Harry's voice also, you know, and then he says, "Sally, it was a mistake." And then we see him in the shower, you know, so, you know, the two of them are getting ready for this date that they said yesterday morning, or they said on Friday, that they will, you know, that they're going to go out, you know, that type of thing. And then it goes back and we hear another voiceover from Sally saying, "I just hope I get to say it first." And then it switches back to Harry in the shower and we hear his voiceover and he says, "I hope she says it before I do," which is great.
Yeah. It's so funny just to show like how, you know, how compatible they are, how synced they are, how in sync they are as a couple. They both want the same thing. I mean, it's not necessarily the right thing in the long run. But yeah, she wants to say it first. He wants her to say it first.
No, but that's just because he's a chicken. That's what it comes down to. It's not like, you know, it's not as if he's trying to be chivalrous here by saying, "Oh, I'll let her say it first." It's the idea that I don't want to have to say it. You know, I want to be able to agree. I want her to say it. Right. I want to make sure that she's going to, you know, she's going to be the one to say that.
You know, he doesn't want to take the risk of saying it and then, you know, she disagrees or gets hurt. Yeah.
Correct.
He wants to follow and just agree with what she says as long as she's saying what
I think that's part of it. I think the other part is he, like I said, he's chicken. He doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to ruin his friendship by saying something that she's not going to agree with, you know, that type of thing. I think that's what it comes down to. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know. I know I've been in this type of situation I was in this type of situation many times when I was single where I became very friendly with a girl and I was afraid to ask her out in order to, you know, because I was afraid of ruining our friendship, that type of thing. You know, you have the whole, you know, idea that if you ask someone out, you might ruin the friendship. But, you know, now that I'm older, I realize that, you know, the fallacy in thinking that, because the bottom line is if you don't need to just have a female friend, you want to have more than that. So I don't know if you've ever been in that situation either, but, you know, I know a lot of my friends who were in similar situations also over the years.
Yeah. I've never really been in that situation. I haven't had a lot of, friendships that became romantic or romantic entanglements that developed into friendships either way. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And then the scene changes and we see the two of them in a restaurant sitting there, you know, all dressed up. And my first question is, you know, why are they both so dressed up? You know, they never stated in the morning. They didn't state in the morning, "We're going to have a formal date, you know, and get dressed up." He said, you know, "I want to take you out to dinner." Mm-hmm. So does, you know, why would that automatically mean let's dress up? You know, I'm going to put on a suit and jacket and you're going to put on, you know, a nice dress and we're going to go out, as opposed to, you know, we've been going out for months as friends. So like, what's, you know, what was the key wording in, you know, during their conversation that tipped them both off to the fact that they have to get dressed up for this?
I think they seem to be dressier than we are today. Maybe that's just the time and you know, what was expected of professionals, certainly in the United States, with like the explosion of what started as business casual, but now is just, I mean, jeans and a t-shirt. Even if you're wearing, you know, if you were in an office wearing jeans and t-shirt, that does not make it business casual, just because, right, like, you know, you're in a business and you're dressed casually. That does not equal business casual. So it is, you know, so I don't think this would have been noteworthy to audiences at the time. And I'm guessing they probably just, you know, by the restaurant, either they met at the restaurant, you know, Harry would say, "Oh, I made reservations here and I'll meet you there." Or he would just tell Sally, "Oh, this is, I know I'm going to pick you up, but this is where we're going." And then she would know, "Oh, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to TGI Fridays or the Cheesecake Factory. Like, oh, this is a nicer place. So, so I'll, you know, she would know just by what restaurant they're going to. But this seems, you know, in general, we see other when, you know, when they're, you know, later we'll see Jess and Harry are like out jogging and they're wearing like athletic clothes because they're, you know, they're exercising. But otherwise, when they're just hanging out, it seems like they're mostly wearing, you know, like a sport coat and, you know, a shirt with a collar. Like we don't see a lot of casual dress in general.
Right.
In the film. Okay. Like, I think this is just the way these people dress, you know, time and place.
It could be. I mean, again, we've seen Harry and Sally, you know, palling around over the course of this movie where they're not dressed up. That's the thing. You know, that's what got me here.
Yeah.
The fact that okay, he said, I want to take you out to dinner. So, you know, again, as you said, it's very possible that they, at some point during the course of the day, had a conversation where he said, okay, we're going to go to this and this restaurant. You know, it's very fancy. You know, it is possible.
Yeah. You know? Or it could, you know, could just be another sign to show how compatible they are as a couple, that they both, you know, they're both of a similar level of dress. And, you know, like, you know, if we go ahead and assume that Harry picked Sally up and did not tell her ahead of time where they were going, but she kind of knew, you know, and this is kind of a not a special event, but this is a particular dinner. You know, this is not just two friends or even two lovers going out to dinner. This is the first time them being out together after the first time that they had sex. Like that's a particular, you know, like a particular milestone in the relationship. And so, you know, so he might think, you know, Harry might think, well, this should be a little fancier than maybe the usual restaurant if I was just going out with a friend, male or female, although, you know, we know Harry doesn't think he can be friends with a woman. And then she might think, well, this is, you know, I want to be a little, look a little better, be a little fancier than usual, because again, this is the first time going out after the first time we've had sex. But yeah, they both seem to be on the same page in terms of it's not, you know, it's not ball gowns and black tie, but it's a little fancy. Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's fair. And then, you know, there's a few seconds of silence, and then Sally talks and she goes, "It was a mistake." And then you can see the relief on Harry's face where he goes, "Oh, I'm so relieved that you think so too. I'm not saying that last night wasn't great." And she responds, "It was. Yes, it was." And he says, "We just never should have done it. I couldn't agree more. I am so relieved. Great." Yeah. You know, you can feel the tension in this conversation between the two of them. You know, you know, anyone who's seen the, you know, the first 75 minutes of this movie knows that they act very differently together up until this point. You know, you know that the events of last week where they finally had sex really has changed the way that the two of them can feel comfortable among, you know, together and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I mean, I like the way that they do this. They show that, you know, and the fact that they both are in agreement here is both a plus and a minus, you know, because, you know, we all know that they really should be together. And right. I have a feeling they think that too, but they're just not ready to accept that.
Yeah. And obviously they haven't overtly expressed, you know, I think I said earlier that there's, you know, the little bit of the dramatic irony that they're saying something that we as the audience know isn't true. And they haven't overtly expressed that, you know, that they don't think it, but I think as the audience, we can presume, you know, we even see, you know, we do get that voiceover where, you know, where Harry says, "Oh, this is a mistake. And I hope she says it first," so that we know, you know, he isn't just agreeing in the moment that, you know, where he's going to agree with whatever she says, which he probably would end up, you know, like you said, you know, he doesn't want to, you know, he doesn't want to take control. He just wants to kind of go along and let things work out hopefully well. So he probably would agree with, you know, with whatever take she comes out, but she just happens to come out with the take that we know
and what he wants. what he wants her to say also, or what he's hoping she's going to say.
Yeah, so she's saying what he hopes she would say.
Right.
So, you know, it wasn't like, it'd be different if we saw him in the shower going, oh, I hope she says it's not a mistake. And then and then she says it's a mistake, but he feels that he has to agree with whatever she's saying. So he did, you know, kind of lay the groundwork to say, well, this is what I hope she says. But again, as the audience, we don't, just because he thought it and he's saying it now doesn't mean we have to believe it.
Correct. That's very true. Did you notice what the two of them are drinking?
I did not notice what they're drinking.
Yeah. Okay, so Sally has a glass, or I guess you could get a third of a glass of white wine, mm-hmm. and Harry actually has a martini.
Is that a martini? Okay, it looks like there's an olive in the glass.
Exactly, there's an olive in the glass, so I'm assuming that that's a martini. So do you know anything about the history of the martini, or do you know what a martini actually is?
I know very little. I think I know what a martini is, but I don't really know about the history. I'm not a martini drinker.
Okay. Do you know what martini is made out of?
So if I believe a martini is usually, it's usually vodka with just a hint or a taste of vermouth. And then could be either served with an olive, or sometimes they have like little pearl onions. Although I think that is that a gimlet? That may be a different drink where it's basically the same alcohol, but a different, if you garnish it with an onion, that's a different drink. But so you garnish with an olive, and then some people, if you put a little bit of the juice, like the liquid that from a jar of olives, that's a dirty martini.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
There's a wide range. Like I've read, like some people say, like, you have, a certain amount of vermouth. Some people will say, well, the ice that you use to chill the vodka, you like pour some vermouth, you swish it around, and then you dump it out. So there's just whatever residue is left on the ice cubes. That's the only vermouth that cools the vodka. And then others will say, well, you take the vodka and you put it in ice to cool, and then you just wave a bottle of vermouth over it. And that's all that's all the vermouth.
You mean like hocus pocus type of thing where you just wave it over?
Yeah. Yeah. You have like the suggestion of there might have been vermouth in the vicinity, but no actual vermouth goes in. But that may be a matter of taste. But other than that, yeah, I really don't know much about
it. Mm. No, I mean, I know that I think you said that you tasted vermouth because of, when you were doing Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day, yes.
So
sweet vermouth on the rocks with a twist.
That's right. And I think I recall you saying that you actually tried it because of that. So
I did try it, and I did not like it. So I would not recommend, straight up vermouth or vermouth on the rocks on its own. not my favorite, but maybe a little bit of vermouth with vodka in a martini. Might be a different story.
Okay, right. So you are correct. A martini is a cocktail that's made with gin and vermouth. And is usually garnished either with an olive or a lemon twist. Okay, it is one of the best known mixed alcoholic beverages. A popular variation is the vodka martini, which uses vodka instead of gin.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's what I was
thinking. In general, it's a 2-to-1 ratio between the gin and vermouth, or the vodka and vermouth.
Oh, 2-to-1.
And that was started in like around 1922. That's when it became very popular. That's what people would drink. A dry martini is made with little to no vermouth. Mm-hmm. And you can sometimes order a martini extra dry, which has even less than that or no vermouth at all. I guess that's the hocus pocus version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. During the 1920s, it was a very common drink order. And over the course of the decades of the 20th century, the amount of vermouth started dropping. So in the 30s, it was a ratio of 3-to-1. In the 40s, it was 4-to-1. And then in the latter part of the 20th century, it reached 5-to-1, 6-to-1, 8-to-1, 12-to-1, and 15-to-1. The 15-to-1 was actually, it's known as the Montgomery.
Okay.
And after British Field Marshal Bernard Montgomery, who was supposedly known for attacking only when in possession of great numerical superiority.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the 15-to-1 works there, obviously.
All right, yeah.
The origin of the name Martini is not 100% known, They say it could be that it came from there was a brand of vermouth that used to be called Martini. So it could be that it came from there. It also could have been called in the 1860s. There was a drink called the Martinez that was very popular in San Francisco, which people would take a they would go to drink there, and then they would take the evening ferry to go to the nearby town of Martinez, California. So that was known about that. Now, I know you know the answer to this question. Who is the most famous fictional character who loves to drink martinis?
Well, that must be Harry Burns, of course.
No, I thought you were going to say Phil Collins.
No, it's it's James Bond, of course.
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct. That's he would order. James Bond. He's known for ordering a vodka martini, shaken but not stirred. Okay, yeah. It actually first appeared in Ian Fleming's novel *Diamonds Are Forever*, and he just asked for a martini, shaken not stirred. He doesn't mention the vodka. That came later, and in the very first James Bond movie, Dr. No, a different character actually says it. The Dr. No, he asks for the vodka martini, shaken not stirred. So they, I guess, decided after that to give it to, the character of Bond. And Sean Connery in Goldfinger is the first time that it actually is said.
Shaken, not stirred.
Can you think of any TV sitcoms that had characters that would always be drinking vodka martinis?
No.
There are two very famous ones, one from the 60s and one from the 70s.
I have a feeling once you say it, I'm going to be like slapping my forehead saying, oh, yeah, I get it now.
But okay. I'm assuming that these are shows that you also saw, like me, in syndication.
Yeah, in reruns.
Right. So one of them is I Dream of Jeannie, where Jeannie would always make a vodka martini.
Oh, yeah, okay.
For Captain Nelson. And it was, and right. She would call it his favorite potion. Yeah. And on the sitcom MASH, a shout out to the MASH Minute. Yeah. I know it's not the movie, but it's the TV show. So, Hawkeye Pierce, played by Alan Alda, had a gin distillery in his tent, which he used to make martinis in just about every episode.
Yeah, that's right. They'd always be in the swamp, which is what they called their tent in the MASH unit. They'd be in the swamp with the martini glass. Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, I knew as soon as you said it, I know I'd recognize it. I just wasn't able to think of it.
But yeah, that's fine. It's perfectly okay. And then we get the final line of this minute where the waiter comes by and says, two mixed green salads. And on the commentary, it's hilarious because Billy Crystal says that that's his favorite looped line in any movie that he's been in. Because apparently it's not something that was said on the set. They added it in later. Mm-hmm. So
the magic of ADR.
That's correct.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting because I didn't. So you asked if I hadn't noticed what they were drinking. I did notice when the food came, because as far as we see, the waiter just places down two plates with with the mixed green salad. There's no, there's no dressing on the side. There's no indication that there's any special order going on. And we know Sally's got, her particular way of ordering in a restaurant. But that's, I don't know if it's, if maybe Harry's, Harry's rubbing off on her. Maybe she just, she knows how much it bothers Harry. So she tries not to do it as much when they're dining together. But as far as we can tell, she's just getting, the same thing that he gets.
I would actually go one step further and say that, when they ordered it, she already told the waiter what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harry said, okay, I'll have the same. That's what I think. Okay. That would be my guess. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that this minute ends. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute before I go into the script?
Nothing. Yeah, no, nothing else particular about this minute, other than to say there's a lot of eating in this film. We see, a lot of their discussions happen over meals. We'll have We'll have Sally kind of snacking in the later minute this week.
Yes.
And I'm not a big fan of that. I'm one of those people. I don't know if it's not like a phobia, or it's not like a psychological issue, but I'm not a big fan of the sound of other people eating. And there's a lot of chewing sounds.
But I think that's done on purpose. Well, we'll talk a little about the chewing tomorrow. It does come up a little more, but you're right. They do eat a lot in this movie, and I think that makes it more realistic.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, in real life, people eat quite often.
Exactly. No, again, even going back, months ago when we were talking about, when they were in the deli and she was having her fake orgasm. I mean, they were both eating deli sandwiches at the time.
Right.
If they were sitting in a restaurant and just talking, and the food would be sitting on the side or whatever it is, it wouldn't have been as effective. Because you do have the point where Harry takes a bite and looks over and is really confused as to what's going on. So I think it adds a little more realism to the characters by having them eat food as they're doing things here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. So yeah, right. Then that's it. So that was all my notes on this particular minute.
All right. So the script just has a few minor discrepancies. In the movie, Harry says, "I'm not saying last night wasn't great." In the script, the line is, "I'm not saying last night wasn't a physically pleasurable sexual experience."
That's a very analytical way of putting it.
Yeah, I think it works better. Just leaving it at that. I'm not saying last night wasn't great. I think that's a good cut. They made the right decision there. And then after Sally says, "I'm so relieved." Okay, so in the movie, Harry says, "Great," and in the script, he says, "Me too." So again, doesn't really make much of a difference. It's as they say, six of one, half a dozen of the other. It's pretty much the same. I think "great," it comes off a little too enthusiastic, that he's like too happy about that. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think the version that we get in the film is better.
Yeah. All right, that's fair. Every Monday we have a segment called Meg Ryan Monday, where my guests will give their top five Meg Ryan performances. So, Sean, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay. And this was kind of difficult going through her, her resume. Actually, I realized there's not a lot of Meg Ryan films that I've seen. So I've seen about five.
There you go. I'm glad you saw at least five.
Yeah, I have seen at least five films with Meg Ryan, so I was able to fill out my five. And so coming in at number five, I'm going to start with Top Gun, which is not a huge part for her, but an entertaining film, and I think she does well with what she has there.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, I'm going to put this film, When Harry Met Sally. Obviously, a much bigger part for Meg Ryan here, but so this will be my number four. Meg Ryan. At number three, I'll put The Doors, the Oliver Stone 1991 film about Jim Morrison and The Doors, which she's got a big part of. And I know, I think that's one of those films that's got a bit of a cult following. I don't know if it's, the critics didn't necessarily love it, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was good, and Meg Ryan's good in that. Number two, I'm going to go... going all the way back to 1986 with John Candy and Eugene Levy, it's Armed and Dangerous.
Ooh. That's a
really good John Candy comedy. Candy and Levy, they're security guards. And Meg Ryan is in with the team that's training them with, the security guard school. And she gets to say the titular line, they finish their security guard training and they're issued weapons. And she says, "All right, you are now armed and dangerous." But so, that's one of my favorite, it's a good John Candy film. So Armed and Dangerous. And then at number one, Joe Versus the Volcano from 1990 with Tom Hanks. Really good Meg Ryan film. She actually plays a few different parts in that one.
Yeah, she plays three. She plays three different characters in that one.
Yeah, she plays. I guess they're half sisters. I don't remember the exact story. They're not triplets, but they're like they're three daughters of a philanderer. So I think they've got three different mothers, but they've got the same father. But yeah, three different characters that she plays, and they're very different personalities, very different characters that she plays, and I think that's part of the comedy of that particular film, or part of the entertainment is, to kind of see her really, strut her stuff as an actress, doing, these vastly different, each outlandish in their own way characters. So yeah, Joe versus the Volcano, and a shout out to Joe versus the Minute. There was a Movies by Minutes podcast that covered Joe versus the Volcano. So
yes, there was.
That's my number one Meg Ryan film right there.
All right, great. So Sean, you want to tell people where they can find Sean German?
Yeah, so if you want to hear more from me, I come from Next Scene Podcast, where we are covering pop culture one scene at a time. You can find us at nextscenepod.com and nextscenepod on the social media.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So, until tomorrow, I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's having. Give me a thrill.
With all your faults, I love you still. It had to be you. Wonderful you. Had to be you.